So let's set some ground rules, because I suspect that most of us have degrees of unfamiliarity when it comes to Sefer Vayikra generally, when it comes to the Korbanot specifically. So we're not going to learn everything there is about Korbanot in the next whatever couple of minutes, but this is what you should be thinking about, and this is what you should be looking for. Is the particular Korban an obligation, or is it optional? Is the animal which is to be brought, will it be eaten, or will it not be eaten? If it will be eaten, who will it be eaten by? Will it be eaten by Kohanim, or will it be eaten by the person who brought it? The animal which is going to be brought, will it be male, or will it be female? Will it be a large animal, or will it be a small animal? Is the animal to be brought in, is it specific obligation that this is the animal that has to be brought? Or is there options in terms of, oh, you could do this, or if not, then you could do this, if not, you could do this. So once you make those various categories of everything I just now said, then everything will work out. One more issue, and that is, are we dealing with something which is on the individual or upon the society, which means Korban Yochanan, Korban Tzibur, and everything I just now said is really everything you need to know, and then you just have to put it in the right categories. Once you know all of that, then you can begin to come up with theories as far as what the larger message may be in terms of what's going on. But before you do that first breakdown of all of just this information, then it becomes very, very difficult. What I want to hopefully get to today is two outliers. And when I say outliers, I mean that once you realize the various rules that apply, then we'll hopefully come to the realization that when it comes to these particular korbanot or situations, or there is something which is outside of the norm. So let's begin the very, very beginning, source number one. Vayikra el Moshe, v'deber Hashem elav me'ol mo'ed, daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, adam ki yakriv mikem korban l'Hashem min ha-behimah, min ha-bakar u'min ha-tzon, takrivut korbanchem. So right away it sets up for us that there are possibilities where the behemah would, or its brought, will be bakar, will be tzon, again, larger animals, smaller animals. Im ola korbano, if the korban is going to be in ola, so we don't know what the word ola means. I know all of you know what it means, but we don't know what the word ola means, and we don't know what the word ola refers to. Im ola korbano, min habakar zachar tamim yakrivenu. So right away you have a couple of the questions that I raised answered, at least over here. You hear that it's a zachar, and you hear that it's min habakar, and it says that you should bring it el petach ohel moed yakrivoto lirtzono lifnei Hashem. And that's a new word which we're being introduced, lirtzono. And what this word lirtzono is actually going to be a very key word. It will hopefully bring about ritsui. It will hopefully bring about, this is something which will cause a positive impact. V'samach yado arosh ha'ola, and the individual who has brought this ola. Now, before I go any further, there did not seem to be over here any kind of reason to indicate why he's bringing the ola, which means as opposed, and you don't know this yet because this is the very beginning and of the book, but you don't know this, but as opposed to what we're going to read as we go further, it's going to say, well, if you did this, then you have to bring this, or if you did this, you have to bring this. And over here, there's no background over here, which means the fact that there's no background makes it very much sound like it is what we would call a nidava. A nidava is a gift because you feel like bringing it. And now you go backwards and read again and look, was there any kind of a action or situation which serves the impetus as why you're bringing this? And once again, when a person brings a korban, but it didn't tell us why or what the reason, rationale was. It just told us that there's this breakdown. Im ola korbanomena, but if it's an ola, this is what you bring. But there's no reason, rhyme, or whatever else you want, or you, if you prefer rhyme and reason, if that makes you happier, then, but there's no, we're not told what the situation is, why this korban ola is being brought, but it says, and this is going to be the part which is confounding, Pasuk Dalid, with samach yado arosh ha'ola, but then you put your hands on top of this ola, v'nirtza lo lechaper alav. And it should be, again, it should be something which is accepted willfully by God, creating ritzoi lichaper alav, to bring for him atonement, or her atonement. Which means, over here you have a korban, with the purpose of the korban, or the objective of the korban, I would say, even, or the result of the korban, is atonement. So if it's atonement, then apparently there was something that went wrong along the way, but we're not given any hint here what exactly was the problem which generated the atonement which is necessary. So I just want to pause here before we start looking further. You now know what the problem with the Korban Olah is, and what everyone's going to have to try to figure out in terms of the Olah, where as opposed to essentially a price list, oh, you do this, you got to pay this, you do this, you have to pay this. When it comes to Korban Olah, there is no quote-unquote sin associated with it, but on the other hand, we do find atonement associated with it, and that's the mystery, as it were. Naomi? If we'll turn the page for a moment to the Chizkuni in source number 7, Im Ola Korbano Shehit Nadev B'loshon Zeh. So notice right away, the Chizkuni correctly points out that there is a nidava, it's optional. It's something which you decided that you want to give a gift. You're not obligated. Shit nadev b'lo shon ze. Im ola korbano. Hit nadev. Patacha katuv ba'ola. Sefer Vayikra begins with ola. Lefi shehi me'ula va'ola kula lema'ala. I'm sure he enjoyed when he wrote that phrase. How would we translate? It can't possibly do justice to what he wrote. It's me'ula. See, I'm going to say it again. What is an olah, and what the olah, the word olah is referring to, is not so simple. Although he did point out a couple of possibilities. One is he called it meula. What does meula mean? That it's superior. It's a superior offering. Ve'ola kula lema'ala, and it all gets completely going up above. So what he just now told us, which we could have figured out if we moved a little bit further in the verses, is that when it comes to the Korban Olah, one of our checklists are, so who gets to eat this particular Korban? In this case, the answer is the Mizbeach, which means it's not eaten by the person who brought it, and it's not eaten by the Kohanim. Just for frames of reference, if you want, the Korban Chatat, when you bring a sin offering, so then the Kohanim eat it. If you bring other offerings, Shlamim, a shlamim is essentially a holy barbecue. Then the family eats it. So over here, we have a korban which is not eaten by the practitioner, as it were, or the person who brings it. It's not being eaten by those, well, practitioners are word. It's not being eaten by those who offer it, and it's not being, or who dedicated it, donated it, and it's not being eaten by those who actually bring it, meaning the Kohanim. Rather, it goes completely to the Mizbeach. And the sensibility of the Chizkuni is that by virtue of the fact that it goes completely up to heaven, it means that on some level that this must be the highest level of Korban. Yakrivu yakdishu va'omer zehiktashti ligavoha, that I've totally dedicated this to heaven, which of course for some of us is going to create an absurdity, but heaven doesn't need it, and all that this does is you get burnt animals. So what did this accomplish? He continues on to say, Lirtsono, why is there ritzui over here, acceptance as it were? Lefisha korban nidava, hu zenem arbo lirtsono, avol bishar korbanot, ein ktiv lirtsono, ho lefamim him ba'im chova. So over here, it's the optional aspect of it. It's the individual, as it were, reaching up to heaven. Nobody told him he has to do this. He wants to do this. He wants to create more holiness in this world. He wants holiness which is going to be a holiness where there can't be any suspicion that there's some other side of it. You know what? I'm gonna bring this thing, but the Kohanim are gonna at least have a barbecue today. Or I'm gonna bring this, and our family is gonna have something to eat today. Where there's some kind of human gain from all this. The way that the Chizkuni is understanding it is that this korban, the olah, is considered to be so special because he's not obligated, and it's totally for the sake of heaven. Of course, we can all respond and say what I already said, but heaven doesn't need this. Nonetheless, he seems to be saying, that doesn't make a difference. I want to create more holiness in this world. So go back to the pasuk again. Go back to the pasuk again, and imula korbanomen abakar zachar tamid yakrivenu petach olamod yakrivu oto lirtzono lufnei Hashem, and afterwards v'samachid or rosh ola v'nirtzalo lechaper alav. Right. So the ritzui over here is double. Those of you who are not clued in on ritzui or what this may mean, it's actually quite important. At the end of many things that we do, we introduce this. Before you get to nirtzah, we'll get to a more basic. We go through the Shemona Esrei, right? We daven what we daven, and then we say ritzei. We say, God, please accept all the prayers that we've been saying. Ritzui is we're asking God to accept our offering. When we go through the whole Seder, you know, we theoretically have done something symbolically relating to the Korban Pesach at the very end of the evening, v'nirtza. May this cause acceptance. We pray for acceptance of our deeds. We pray for acceptance when we reach out to God. And over here, v'samach l'arosha olav v'nirtza lo l'chaper olav. But I'm going to say it again. The thing which stands out over here and has to be dealt with is l'chaper olav. Is the atonement over here, because we have no clue, as of this point at least, what it is that we are atoning for. Yes. At face value, as I'm going to say this again, this need for atonement, or the resulting atonement, is not particularly clear. Source number 8 is a source which exists in a couple of places and in a couple of different forms. The form that I'm quoting from it over here is a version of the Psikta, 8:8. It's a version of the Psikta, which is recorded in the Otz Midrashim. A number of the Rishonim quoted in this particular version, and hopefully we'll all notice that there's a problem right away with it, or maybe not. I'll just mention that. Let me point out what this is. This is the most famous, or I'll put it a little differently, the primary source of this is most likely Yerushalmi at the end of, I believe, the second chapter of Makot. And it says that the sinner who has sinned and therefore is spiritually devastated really does not know what it is that they can do to fix this. So the following discussion takes place. Sha'alul chachamim nefesh achotat ma'unsha. So the chachamim, which means the rabbis, were asked, when somebody sins, what's the result? Source 8. Shalul chachamim nefesh achotat ma onsha. When a person sins, what is the result? What's the punishment? Amru chataim tirdof ra'ah. So wisdom, as it were, the wise men, who here are represented by Shlomo HaMelech, by Sefer Mishlei. So if you sin, bad things are going to happen. Karma. This is not going to work out good. Karma with God is not a good thing. Chataim terdof ra'ah. Sin will breed other bad. Shalul nevuah. And then the prophets were consulted. Hachotei ma'uncho. What is going to happen to the person who sins? Amrav ha'nefesh achotat tamut. In quotes from Yecheskel, that if somebody sins, death is what follows. Shalul Torah chotei ma'uncho. And they asked the Torah, what is the punishment? Amra yavi asham, let him bring a korban asham, which is a type of a guilt offering. V'yitchaper lo dichtiv v'nirtza lo lechaper alav. As it says, they will create ritzoi and will create atonement. Now the only problem with the pasuk that it just now brought, is that the pasuk is from the Ola. This was our pasuk that it brought. It was not the verse associated in any place with asham. It's this particular verse, which is really quite surprising, because here it is absolutely connecting the Ola with guilt. And it's saying, but it also says something interesting. It's saying that while wisdom understands that what is going to be the result of sin, that bad things are going to happen, and while prophecy, again, knows the future, what's going to happen, it's going to cause death. But the Torah says no. The Torah, which goes beyond wisdom and beyond prophecy, the Torah says you can bring this offering and then it will create atonement if you just want to go. And generally when this is quoted, this part is ignored. and just skips to the next part, Shalul HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chotei Ma'unsho, and when God is consulted and God says what's going to be, Amud Le'aset Tshuvai V'tchaper Lo Dichtiv Tov Yashar Hashem Alkein Yiroch Hatim B'derech Pirish Lasot Tshuva. That what should a person do? Do tshuva and everything will be okay. Which is also very interesting because, and one would begin to contemplate, is this a post-Churban source? Is it a source during the time of the Beit HaMikdash? If the Beit HaMikdash is still here, and say, hold it, let's not get all carried away anyway, because there's other ways of fixing this. And basically you do tshuva, which leads us back to the point, but what is this atonement? But for our purposes here, I'm not as interested in the tshuva angle, but what I am fascinated with is the fact that it brought this particular verse, because this is not the right verse, and it is not a verse which is talking about a sin offering. But do you at least understand when this source was looking for this idea that atonement, or ritzoi is again, it's the ritzoi over here would seem to be clearly with God, that God has now accepted the person, and now atonement was achieved, and it could not withstand the temptation of saying, oh, this is the sinner, because of course it's the sinner. Why is it the sinner? Because atonement was achieved. And I'm going to say, but there's only one problem with all this. And what's the problem? The problem is the Korban Olah. And we had no reason to believe that the Korban Olah was in any way, shape, or form associated with sin per se, other than the fact that atonement was told. Okay, so do you all feel very comfortable now in your world of Korbanot? I understand. But it quoted this pasuk. It could. As I said, the problem over here is the crossing of signals. Is using the word asham on the one hand, and on the other hand, bringing this verse, and this verse is associated with the Ola. So is the Ola asham, or is this some kind of a general description? It's not a simple thing, and I'm going to say this again. This particular version is not the version which is found in most sources, this using this pasuk, but it is quoted by Rishonim, which tends to make it a little bit stronger as well. And you look in various midrashim beforehand, what is it that brings this upon? I accept that. I absolutely accept that. Look at the Nitziv, which is in source 10, which as far as I can tell from the title of last year's class, must have been what I focused on. V'hakaparaba, the atonement over here regarding the Ola, al eza avon shebein adam l'shamayim, sheze gorem Ha'edir koach la'sig dat elokim. Of course, what he's referring to is the pasuk in Hosea. So just, we'll go a little bit further with this. U'memeila in ha'tfila mitkabelet gamkein. U'baha'ola lirtzoto lifnei Hashem. V'zeh dvar Hosea ha'navi, ki chesed chafatzti v'lo zevach v'dat elokim me'olot. The ikar chifetz Hakadosh Baruch Hu bekorban ola, hu sheyasig dat elokim v'lo guf ola. That the purpose of the ola is somehow to create the relationship with God, and the purpose of the ola is to create dat elokim, and that is understood by the lamenting, which is found in Hosea, where it says chesed chafatz de v'lo zavach v'dat elokim me'olot. So therefore, I didn't want just the dead animal, I wanted the dat elokim. So the Nitziv understands over here that what was really the objective of the Ola was to create dat elokim. But it was also interesting along the way he said that prior to this, with the person he claims, just did you notice what he said? That the person who brings the Ola, he says it creates kapara, on some kind of sin bin adam l'shamayim. Okay, what sin was that? And he said another thing here, that prior to this, u'memeila ina tefila mitkabelet gamken. It created the situation where God was not accepting this person's prayers at all. There was this distance, there was this dysfunctionality in the person's relationship with God, and the Ola is over here in the mind of the Nativ coming to fix this dysfunctionality in order to create ritzoi. So therefore now we can have this relationship again. And again, the main point is this dat elokim. Although he spoke in such general terms and these broad strokes, we don't know exactly what it was that the person did that they required this atonement, other than a general dysfunctional relationship with God. Source number 9 is Rav Hirsch, who we know is actually the go-to when it comes to all things Mikdash, Mishkan, Korbanot. Ola, regilim lefresh ola b'mashmut kalil. Complete. Korban ola kulo ba'ish. So therefore, ola would be that it's, we're tempted to translate it, he says, as something which is completely burnt, a complete burnt offering. Everything is burnt. It all goes up into heaven, therefore ola. Ach kimat ve'en lecha simuchin b'shorish ola. He said there's only one problem with this, and that is that it just doesn't work in terms of the Hebrew language. Hein ze pirush tavo, and I'm going to skip his language analysis. Vadein medubar sham hashmada, and we'll skip a couple lines down. Mishum kach nira lanu, sha'ola nov'at min hatzorech la'she'ifa la'olot u'lehitkadem. What he's suggesting is that the korban ola is when a person wants to be mit'ale. It talks about the person who brings it and not the korban itself. That's essentially what Rav Hirsch just now said, rather than trying to say, oh, the korban ola means that's the korban where the korban goes completely up. Yeah, technically it's true that korban is not eaten, but he said that's not why it's called the korban ola. The ola over here is the individual who is going to be mit'ale, the individual who is going to be mitkadem, and now we'll see how he explains this. Achin ola mechaperet ala se ba'lo tase. We'll come to that in a moment. Mikom akom evi ola yodea shehu nimna mi lemale et chovato v'tachlit ola lazhir mimechtalim la'atid. The main purpose of the ola, he says, is forward generated in order to help a person refocus in order to avoid mistakes in the future. Ulam komi lo chovahu hitkadmut chiyuvit. So therefore, let's move forward in a positive way. Yesh bo mishum aliyah bishlemut musarit v'hu tzad nosaf v'ma'alat hamusar hamivalidei kirvat Hashem. Korban ola hu korban ha'aliyah v'ha'hitkadmut v'shem ze mivate et itzumo shel korban et sibuto v'et achlito b'vchinat hamusag. So in English, the korban he's telling us has very little to do, except for the part I skipped. It has very little to do about the past, and it's really future-oriented. The Korban Olah is for the person who wants to become closer to God, no problem with this, and therefore it's going to help them avoid mistakes. It's as if saying that the atonement which is going to be achieved is atonement by virtue of, who got it? Of avoiding mistakes. It's the atonement which will be because I didn't sin after I brought the Korban Olah, and now you just have to ask yourself one question if you buy it. If you're convinced by this just in terms of the language, it's a very nice idea. And right, as I said, he was so much in the beginning telling, well, the language just doesn't work in terms of the, it can't be the Korban is the Olah, it must be the person who is Oleh. So he worked very hard in order to make this point, and therefore makes this whole thing in terms of moving up and being better, and avoiding mistakes, and it's positive psychology, if you will, as opposed to dealing with guilt and problems and things that we've done in the past, which is also, by the way, if he's right, it's just a very interesting way to start the book of Vayikra. Let's be positive, let's move forward, let's make our future good, and the Korban Olah is the way of doing this, and afterwards we'll deal with all the mistakes and all the baggage that we carry around and so on. As I said, it really is quite interesting what he says, but at the end of the day, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's hopeful. But the only problem is at the end of the day, if we're convinced in terms of the language, I mean, this is also typical of Hirsch. He says beautiful things, but at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, but is that really what the Torah said or not? Or as his great-grandson, Rav Boryer, would say, that something to that effect, is that what's really nice is not true, and what's really true isn't nice, and therefore, and Rav Hirsch is always beautiful. And this was actually, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Boryer's translation, making it even more beautiful into modern Hebrew, but nonetheless, we are still somewhat mystified, because it's not a core. Okay, source number four, the Riva. Riva is one of the Balei HaTosfot. Going back, v'nirtzeh lo, again, the Korban is going to bring about Ritzui. Do we have a translation of Ritzui? Acceptance. Vikasha, and he asks, Hechi Dami, what are we talking about? So I like this because he finally asked the question, what in the world is this case? What is the situation? Hechi Dami. Ida Avid Shuva, are we dealing with a case with a person who already did Shuva? Now keep in mind what we had already seen before from our Yerushalmi or the Psikta and so on. Did this person do Shuva? Lamali Kapara. So if he did Shuva already, so then what kind of Kapara does he need? He already did Shuva. Vahatnan, Avar Alase, Vahasar Shuva, Lo zaz misham ad shemochlim lo. Are we talking about a person who missed out on a mitzvah taseh? Now, I'm going to have to finally do this, so let's pause in the middle of this source and let me move back to Rashi. Rashi is going to, as he normally will do, Rashi will represent what Chazal say about this particular verse. V'nirtzalo, almahu miratzelo. Rashi asks the basic question. What is the ritzoi for? Which means there seems to be something wrong that was done. Now listen to the subtlety. Im tomor al kritotu mitut beitin, o mitabidei shamayim o malkut, harei onshan amur. If you're talking about all of these severe cases, somebody did something which was guilty of karet, or of death, penalties from the courts, or from shamayim, or lashes, in all of those cases, the Torah told you what the punishment was. And then he says, and it didn't say bring a korban, and again, Rashi's dealing with the problem that we're not told what the olah is for, and then he finally tells us what it's for. It's not for something that you've done. It's for something you haven't done. Harei einu miratzeh ela al aseh va'alav shenintak la'aseh. It's brought for a mitzvat aseh that you failed to perform. Or lav hanitak la'aseh is something which says don't do this, but then do this to fix it, and you didn't do the positive, you didn't do the fixing yet. Which means what Rashi is really telling us, and again, this is Chazal, is that why do you bring the Korban Olah? It's not like the Korban Chatat. What is a Chatat? Where you did a Chet. What's a Chet? You made a mistake. You made a mistake. You did something wrong. Over here, you also did something wrong, but you did something wrong not by commission, but by omission. You did something, well, actually, you didn't do anything. So when you didn't do anything, so then what do you do if you didn't do anything? And if you didn't do anything, do you need any atonement? Because you didn't do anything. So sometimes when you didn't do anything, you really do need atonement. Why? Because you didn't do anything. Good. So your mother channeled in her inner Rashi. So finally Rashi really solved the mystery. Why does the person need atonement if they didn't do anything? So the answer is because they didn't do anything. They should have done something. So that's that now we hear loud and clear what the background is for the Ola. But you also realize the brilliance of this approach because
say what you should have done?
Yes. Any mitzvah taseh where it says you should have done this and you didn't do it. So Rashi solved the problem. Guilt is if you've done something. You broke. Feeling guilty is a whole other problem. Feeling guilty is a whole other issue. Over here, the difference between doing something wrong and not doing something right. So therefore, let's just say, I don't want to go into examples, let's just say that there is really a positive mitzvah on every single day for a man to put on tefillin. Mitzvah taseh shezman gorma, and let's just say this morning he didn't put on tefillin. So therefore, he didn't do what he was supposed to do. So now, what exactly is the punishment going to be? So now, the Gemara says, and we're going to go back to our Riva in a moment, the Gemara says, is that if a person missed out on a mitzvah taseh, so what do? You say to God, I'm really sorry I missed it out, I'm going to do better tomorrow. That's all. And that creates the forgiveness. And generally, I could have done better. I'm going to redouble my efforts. It's not the same thing as having done something wrong. It's just missing out on doing something right. So missing out on doing something right, the Gemara's opinion is, so say I'm going to do it right tomorrow. So that essentially is what you need to fix it. So going back to the Riva now, Vakasha. And this is difficult. Hey, Chidami, what are we talking about? Ida avid tshuva. If the person already did tshuva, lamali kapara, then why does he need atonement? V'hatnan, and we learned, avar al aseh, if a person missed doing a mitzvah taseh, v'asat tshuva, and he did ask for forgiveness of God, lo zaz misham ad shemuchlim lo. Doesn't even move from that place till God says, okay, I accept that tshuva and you are forgiven. There's mechila. V'id lo avit tshuva, and if the person hasn't done tshuva yet, zevach rishaim to'iva. If not, then that became very ominous, saying that if you haven't really changed your ways, so this is an offering which is considered to be disgusting, because it's the offering of somebody who's wicked. It's the person who thinks they can take out the checkbook and just make a donation and doesn't have to change any ways of theirs, and everything's accepted. Aval hacha da'ola nadava hi she'im yirtza yitein hakapara alav, af agav she'im avad tshuva nimcha lo b'lo ola, mikol makom enu nimcha mikol the kol ad mighty ola. So it seems to be what he's saying over here is that nonetheless there are degrees, and yes, they're forgiven, but there is degrees of forgiveness, and at least that's the way I understood this. The Ramban in source number 5 is going to introduce another issue into all of this. He's going to work hard, and he's going to tell us eventually a rule, which will be a hard and fast rule, which all of us will assume is true until we find counter evidence. And over here he quotes Rashi in the beginning, and Rashi is quoted from the Torah to Kohanim, and we'll skip to afterwards when he writes Va'ani Tama, and nonetheless I am in shock out of this, or I have a very serious question. V'chi heichon onshin amor, ki hakorbanot bishkogin hein miratzin. And he says, can we slow down a little bit? And here's the rule that the Ramban introduces. The Ramban says when it comes to all korbanot, and I'm going to tell you right now, whether this is 100% true or 90% true or not necessarily true, we're going to still have to decide. But the Ramban sets a rule which will be, I'll put it this way, the obvious conclusion, only question is if it's the only conclusion. And that is that you look at all the korbanot which exist. Are korbanot as a whole brought when a person deliberately sins, or a korbanot brought when somebody accidentally sins? Now that itself is really interesting, which means, if this is correct, ki a korbanot bishkogin hein miratzin. He goes, when do korbanot bring forgiveness, atonement? They bring it if you sinned by accident. And I just, again, want to pause there for a moment, which means we're led to believe at this point that this entire enterprise of the Mishkan and of all the Korbanot are dealing with accidental sinners, and accidental sinners are very, very different from the hardcore sinners that actually need atonement, that the hardcore sinners who need atonement, so what are we doing with them? And you start looking through all the Korban Chatat and so on and so forth. All of these things have to do with sins that are done by accident. And again, that's what the Ramban right now is telling us. Of course, we can ask ourselves, is this really true in terms of Yom Kippurim? Is it really true in terms of the Seir Mishtaleach? Is it really true in terms of the other Avodah? If somebody has what they think is, okay, schmaltz in front of them, if you want, we'll give you a recipe how to make schmaltz. Don't listen to all of these people that tell you it's bad for you, it's good for you, it's healthy. The scotch is not going to work on Pesach. With the onions thrown in, it's perfectly healthy. Anyway, I once bought a cookbook, which I never would have bought, and I opened it just to be amused. It was some of that cooking kosher the natural way. And then in the very beginning it said, oh, what about schmaltz? And then it said, oh, and Green's an article from Prevention Magazine, how it's actually quite healthy, and it's that it's not bad for you, and all these people think schmaltz is going to kill you. You should keep eating it till you're 120. Anyway, there are certain types of fats which are chelev, and there are certain which are fat. Chelev, you're not allowed to eat. So if somebody comes over to you and you think you're about to eat some schmaltz, which is kosher, and says, that's chelev, you can't eat that. Or it's different parts of the fat. Generally, your butcher will know what chelev is and cut it off and make sure it never gets near your plate. So not to worry about, just make sure you have a good butcher. So chelev is not kosher. So let's just say you just now ate a kazayis of chelev, and somebody comes running over to you and says, you ate a kazayis of chelev, and you say, oh my God, I thought it was schmaltz, and it's chelev. So then what happens if the Beis HaMikdash stood, or two Eidim come over and say, you ate chelev, or whatever, you say, oh, I have to bring a korban chatas. Why? Or chatat, why? Because I ate chelev. Now what happens if you say, I know it was chelev, I did it on purpose. The the korban. No, it's not the korban. It's not even the korban work. There's no korban to be brought in such a case. And again, the korban chatat is for a mistake. It's not for something which was done on purpose. Very easy to get yourself out of the korban. Say, I did it on purpose. The Gemara has this in a number of cases. The Edom, you did this? I know I did this. I embrace that I did this. I'm a chaylev eater, right? And by the way, the followers of Shabtai Tzvi were chaylev eaters. It was one of these things that they embraced sin, and this was a sin which was one of the silliest sins that you can do, and it's sinning for the sake of sinning, because it's... Anyway, but that was one of the things that to go out of the way to sin. So there are certain parts of fats, chaylev, which are not to be eaten by individuals. Now, what the Ramban just now heard, because you don't know what he's referring to yet, what he heard is that when I say that the ola is for the mitzvah taseh that I missed, there's two ways of missing a mitzvah taseh. One way of missing the mitzvah taseh is that, well, let's think about it again. Why did I need atonement for the mitzvah taseh? Did I not do this on purpose, or did I not do this by accident? What was exactly the case that Rashi referred to a moment ago when Rashi said, Ha'enu meratze ela aseh? I didn't do mitzvah taseh. Now, why didn't I do that mitzvah taseh? Did I not do the mitzvah taseh deliberately, or did I not do the mitzvah taseh accidentally? If it's accidentally, then I didn't do a mitzvah taseh accidentally. So what kind of culpability is that? What do you mean I didn't do a mitzvah taseh? It means I was unaware of it? So I mean, and the more you think about it, you understand exactly what the Ramban is getting to. When I say that bringing the korban ola is connected to a mitzvah taseh that I missed, the Ramban is hearing that we just now got suspiciously close to a situation that it may be because of a mazid. That's exactly what's bothering him over here. And now let's look back inside of the Ramban. Vani tama v'yichen hechan onsho amor ki hakorbanot bishogigin hein meratzin. Korbanot work, and now this is the broad statement of the Ramban, they work when you did something by accident, bishogeg. V'nuchal lo mishich hapru al chayvim mito to beit in shamayim shogim achavim alkot shogim achavim mito beit in shogim botan she'en chayvim ala chatat. And it gives, could it be all these things? That when it comes to these other things, the only punishment you get when you do something b'mezid is the punishment which is written in that particular case. There is no korban in such cases. When you deal about the case of accidentally doing something, ain aleim shum nisiat chait. But by the way, now we're stuck. If it's mazid, then you need for it to be fixed, but then the only punishment is the punishment which is written. If it's something b'shogeg, so why should you need ritzoy if you only did something accidentally? If you did if you avoided a mitzvah taseh on purpose, shelo iskirim shum onesh, and by those it doesn't say any punishment next to it. What happens if you did not do the mitzvah taseh on purpose? V'efshar shelo ya'anesh behem b'zeiratze ba'ola hazu im yivienu b'nidvat nafsho. V'itachen lo amar ki bavur shelo iskir b'kobanot nedava. When somebody does something accidentally, there can be ritzui. Im kein if shelo lechaper ala mizidin. So I will explain this line in a moment to make sure we all got it. So just to pause a moment and to understand what it is that he said. He's willing to accept the possibility that a korban ola may in fact work if you did not do a mitzvah taseh, b'mezid. On the other hand, he finds it impossible to even consider the thought that a korban ola can work if you did anything else b'mezid. It can only possibly work by the aseh B'mezid, because he's aware of the technical problem over here, that if you missed an assay and it wasn't, there was no acknowledgement there was a say over here to be done, so how exactly did you miss out the assay? It almost has to be a case of mezid, and therefore the Ramban seems to have backed down a little bit from his statement at the beginning, but korbanot only work b'shogeg, over here says b'mezid. Now, in source number 6, if I'm not mistaken, the Maharal goes even further. This we'll have to decide together if I'm reading it right or not. But he's working off of Rashi and he's working off of the Ramban. The Ramban was working off of Rashi. Although, perhaps let's just read one more thing before the Maharal. The last two lines in the Ramban here, he brings one more midrash. For iti ba'agada, tani Reb Shimon ba'yochai, eina ola ba ela al-hihuri avira halev. This is another opinion that says the Korban Olah isn't even for a sin, but it was for thoughts of sin. You thought about sinning, and therefore your mind was imperfect, and therefore that's why it's brought. And again, this is another solution to the problem that we don't have anything written over here, nonetheless it writes about atonement. By virtue of the fact of using the word atonement, it sounds like the latter. I'm upset that that's what it suggests. That's exactly the issue. And that's why all along today, that's the problem. The problem is lechaper alav. So lechaper alav is what we wouldn't have suspected by the Ola. That's the problem. That's the disconnect over here. Ritzui, I can understand. But lechaper alav with the Korban Ola, so what's the lechaper? That's exactly what we've been dealing with the whole time. The Ramban earlier, what was doing was a process of elimination. He says it can't be because of this, and it can't be this, and it can't be this. He was pushing those other examples aside, not that he was including them, he was excluding them. Okay, let's now look at the Maharal. Those who don't know or don't remember, source number 6 is called the Gur Aryeh. The Gur Aryeh is the Maharal. The Maharal's commentary is not a commentary on the Chumash, it's a commentary on Rashi. It's what's called a super commentary. It's one of the various commentaries on Rashi. Most of the time, all that he's doing is explaining Rashi. Over here, he deviates a little bit because the Ramban explains Rashi a little bit, so now he's going to move over to the Ramban as well. And we're jumping in the middle over here. Va'od nira, she'im hayah ha'ola ba'al shogeg, malkot, omitet midei shamayim. Again, it goes back to this possibilities of what the Ola could be dealing with. Kasha, to ha'ola chamura, shehi kula kalil. Now, let's just pause for a moment. He's raising over here something which is very interesting, and it goes back to what I said in the very beginning. We need to take the various korbanot, and we need to compare them one to the other. Over here, he is observing that nobody eats this korban, it gets completely burnt, so in a certain sense, this is the most severe of all korbanot. And if it's the most severe of all korbanot, let's just think out loud at where he's going to have to get to, does it really make sense that this is brought because you missed an opportunity to do a mitzvah? So it has to be more severe, just to understand already where it is that he has to go once he raises this question. When I compare... So let me answer. When you compare the Korban Olah with the other Korbanot, so as I said from the beginning, some Korbanot are eaten by the whole family, which is basically one of a happy, holy barbecue. Some of them are the person who brings it can't touch it, and the Kohanim eat it. So therefore, the Kohanim have a happy barbecue, but not the person who brought it. And those are going to be the sin offerings. Sin offerings you don't partake of. Sin offerings the Kohanim partake of. But over here, the Kohen doesn't eat it. You don't eat it. No one eats it. So he is understanding. You can question his analysis, but his analysis is absolutely fair. He's saying, Kasha, there's a difficulty. To ha'ola chamura, there's something about the korban olah which makes it more severe. Shehi kula kalil, because over here everything about it is burnt, and there is no human part of this. V'kevan delo chayv torah b'shum makom b'shogeg shiyachayv korban zeh. and we don't find any kind of shogeg action that would generate the bringing of a korban ola, the adaraba, krub nadava iri. Rather, the opposite is true. There's no obligation to bring the korban ola. It is an idava. You feel like giving it. Dichtiv ki akriv, if a person happens to feel like bringing it. Veloktiv shechayav lahakriv. Ve'imkein chet ze yoter kal bishogeg, kevin shelo kavalim korban bishogeg b'chiyuv. So there seems to be something about, and this is Rashi, there seems to be something about it which is a little lighter because there's no obligation, and by the shogeg there's actually an obligation. And all this was the quote again, going back to Rashi. V'imkain, lama matara ola shehi yoter chamura shehi kulu kalil shehi chaper al zeh v'alo mistaber al chet shehu yoter chamur yavi korban chamur. He says that logic would dictate that there seems to be a more severe sin that was committed if you need to bring what, in a certain sense, is a more severe korban. V'lamayavi korban shu kalil al-kal. Why would you assume that such a severe korban is brought for something which is so light? Ela bivadai michaper al-mezid. But rather, he says, it must be that the korban ola is brought because a person did something deliberately. Now, when I read this line, and therefore the person is told that they can bring it. Now, I'm pretty sure, and we can debate this, in the Ramban himself, we ended up getting to this point that it was b'mezid, but b'mezid that I didn't do mitzvah taseh. If that's what the Maharal means, then he should have said it. He should have written that in a much clearer way. My sense of reading this is that it's also for a person who did something severe, although we still have to work out the obligation versus not the obligation. Let's just get to the last line. Mizatam sfirle gamken daola ba al mezid shu asa bida'ato uvamach shavato. Again, not shelo asa. Mezid shahu ose bida'ato uvamach shavato. The only thing, I worked very hard all week to find this. I sort of had this understanding this was there someplace, and I believe that he says this completely, and let's just think this through a little bit, and then we'll see if we can get anything else out of it. The person who does something deliberately has essentially said, I don't accept God as my... I don't accept God. God gives commandments. I just don't accept those commandments. I want to do this, so I'm going to do what I want to do, and that's what mezid is. Mezid includes that thought process. I mean, you know, the very end that we saw of the Ramban, you know, I want to do something. The only difference is that mezid doesn't only include the thought process, it also includes actions. When we had that last line in the Ramban, we were already at that point, oh, you thought about doing something, you need to bring a korban olah. So where the Maharal went a step further, yeah, you thought you wanted to do it, there was an act of rebellion over here. So it seems to be that the Korban Olah is saying, now I have to make a logical decision. Nobody's telling me. Why is nobody telling me what to do? Because I've already decided that nobody can tell me what to do. So now how does the Korban Olah fix that? Nobody's telling me what to do. I need now to make an informed decision that I accept upon myself God, and I want to bring this because I want to bring this as an act of accepting God on top of myself, even though God's not telling you anything right now. You know why God's not telling you? God's not talking to you. Why is God not talking to you? Because you have deliberately defied. You've deliberately defied what God has said, and now you have to make this decision. You accept God upon yourself. You want to bring this, and you go ahead and bring this. Now, this korban is something which is a completely accepting God on myself. Now go back to everything else that we saw today. You want to go up. The korban goes up. You want to go up. But over here, again, just channeling this whole Maharal, what you are essentially getting to this point is taking the rebellion and turning the rebellion into subservience. Which means when we got to the end over here, what happens? What happens is ritzoi. What happens is atonement. Why is it necessary? Why wasn't there a command? Because a person doesn't accept, is not accepting commands. Now, if this is the case, It's fascinating that this is the starting point. The starting point then of Korbanot is not as we may have thought, oh, let's start with a person who just like wants to do something nice. No, it could very well be, you know, with this Maharal, it could very well be that the starting point is the person who has been as outside as possible and now needs to open up the door and start this new relationship, accepting God upon themselves and saying, I want to bring this. And even in a broken situation like this, it creates ritzoy and atonement. And once I realize that that's possible to be fixed, so then what else do I know? All the little things that I've done, all the little mistakes that I've made, all of the misjudgments that I made, which is all the Korban Chatat, all of that now becomes easy. Is that therefore, in a sense, what the Maharal is telling us is that this is the most severe of all the Korbanot, and this is something which goes completely up to heaven, which means the person who had sinned b'mezid on purpose, calculating, thinking about it, Yetzara totally won over that person. That person now needs to win over the Yetzara completely and make this decision that I am going to accept God upon myself and I'm going to bring something completely dedicated to God without any other personal gain. I'm not going to, again, there's no barbecue, there's nothing else over here. And that is the Korban Ola. So that becomes, as I said, a very interesting starting point of the book of Vayikra. Although, let's just finish as we started. There are rules to Korbanot. They need to be compared to one another. Once we understand these rules, the Korban Ola is going to stand out. What the Korban Ola ultimately is, because of the lack of description, we now come to this realization that there's all kinds of different ways of understanding it. But the one thing I do want you to appreciate is that that source that we saw about the sinner, right, the ashram, the sinner, and this verse is the verse that was quoted after having seen the Maharal, that source makes a lot more sense now that the person who sins, no, even the deliberate sinner who prophecy perhaps had prophesied death or other terrible things were going to happen to this person, that maybe that was the right verse to be quoting over here, because even the terrible sinner, the asham, asham is emptiness, the person who's empty, even that person can come in, knock on the door, open the door, and enter into the world of God once again and fix that relationship. So if that's the case, then the Korbanah becomes this revolutionary Korban that, as I said, is a wonderful way to start the book of Vayikra.